343, 344, Gerizah Tshuva, chapter 1. We are 1, 2, 3, 4 lines down at the parenthesis. Okay, last week we sort of like defined what Tshuva was. We talked about Tshuva and sort of start talking about it. The Alter Rebbe describes the various different levels of Tshuva. In this chapter we're going to be giving a definition to what Tshuva is. And for what one must do Tshuva, is at least according to the Gemara.
Okay.
So he's quoting now a Braisa, which is found at the end of Masechta Yoma, and describing that there are different sins, and there are different ways that they must be, for which they must be atoned. Mm-hmm. Okay, so he said before that if a person did some sort of forgot to do something, so he can sit and say I'll do shuva, and he doesn't move from that spot, Hashem forgives him immediately. But if he did something wrong, he was over a Mrs. Losase, right. So he has to do tshuva, and his tshuva is suspended until he gets to Yom Kippur. So now he's going to qualify that this is a bracket. This bracket goes down to the bottom of the page, pretty much. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lines from the bottom of the page.
Okay,
so even though the Braisa that he's quoting is basically 4 lines, but it takes up a whole page because of his little note here. Pirush. Now, so what it sounds over here is that you got to do a lot more. If a person does something wrong, he has to do a whole lot more to get forgiven than if he didn't do something right. Meaning, Afogav the Ilin Kiyam Mitzvasase Gedela Shadechas Aloisase. When you're talking about which one's more important, a positive commandment or a negative commandment, we have a rule that a positive commandment supersedes a negative commandment. And there are many examples for this. Like, for example, saving a life supersedes just about everything.
Right.
Okay? If a person has a heart attack on Shabbos, we go dial 911. We get the guy into the ambulance. We go with him with the ambulance, whatever needs to be done. We save the guy's life, and Shabbos gets pushed away under the guise of desecrate one Shabbos so that many Shabboses can be preserved.
Right.
Similarly, also, for example, your talis that you wear could be made out of shotness. Because the mitzvah of tzitzis, you can have wool tzitzis
on a linen talis,
or vice versa, with no problem, because there's a mitzvah of tzitzis specifically. Okay, and we see that the clothes of the Kohen Gadol were made out of shotness.
Right,
these were positive commandments.
Right.
So a positive commandment is greater as far as it's needing to be kept. That means to say, why is that a mitzvah sase is given more precedent, more credence? In other words, what he's trying to say over here is don't poo-poo a positive commandment simply because all you have to do is sit down and say, I'm sorry, and God forgives you, whereas a lo sase, you have to wait till Yom Kippur. Okay, don't worry, you can't go balancing which one's greater, which one's smaller. As far as that's concerned, looking at that way, because in actuality, a mitzvah sase is much greater. Because what happens when a person performs a positive commandment, he draws down from the infiniteness of Hashem, the level of Ratzon of Hashem, down here, which is enclosed into the physical world. That means to say that we are given our job, as we talked about in chapter 33 of Tanya, is lasas lo yizbarach dira b'tachtonim, is to make this world a dwelling place for God. That means that we are charged with the task that every physical thing has to convey godliness. Right. The easiest way by which physical things can convey godliness is through using them to perform mitzvahs.
Right, yeah, sure.
When a person uses a thing to perform a mitzvah, it becomes imbued with godliness. To the extent, for example, the hide taken from a sheep becomes sacred when we make it into a sefer Torah.
Right.
What is it before we make it into a sacred a sefer Torah? It's a piece of mutton.
Sheep
That's what it is. Okay? You can do anything you want with it, you know. So but the fact that what we are doing now is we are imbuing godliness so that it permeates through and through.
Right.
And therefore, a person who is engaged in doing a mitzvah is it's required, according to Shulchan Aruch, if you see somebody doing a mitzvah, you have to stand up in front of them, because they're conveying and drawing down the divine presence.
Right.
So this is true with every single of the 248 commandments, as he says in the little parenthesis, in the middle of the parenthesis, K'mar shekosev b'zayhar, deramach pikudin inin ramach evorin demalka, that the 248 limbs, the 348 commandments, these are the 248 limbs of the king. Meaning, now what's a limb? A body part.
Yeah.
There's one thing that we can talk about your body part is that you have no body part that does not have a soul clothed within it. Let's say that in a positive way. Every single body part has soul enclosed in it.
Absolutely.
And every single body part is conveying whatever it is that the soul wants it to do. Hopefully. If not, you're going to be in big trouble.
Right.
Okay? And when we talk about the 248 limbs of the king, I says, I would love to see a comprehensive list of the 248 commandments corresponding to the 248 body parts.
Yes.
We have an inkling with some, like your left arm you get for tefillin, and your right hand is for giving tzedakah.
Right.
And your mouth is for studying Torah, and your legs are for taking you to wherever you got to go to do some mitzvah, whatever it is, or chalitza, whatever, you know. So you have some of those. And I used to make a joke that I'd like to know really what mitzvah you do with your spleen.
Yeah, or your appendix.
Yeah.
Right.
So with your spleen, actually, it says in one of some Kabbalah I came across that that's where your... your sense of happiness in performing mitzvahs comes from, specifically in mitzvahs chasen, mesameh chasen vekala.
So, seriously?
Yes, you do that with your spleen.
All right, there you go.
So, what about those people who had
their spleens
removed for some reason?
Yeah.
Well, they all have this artificial spleen medicine that they're all on.
Right.
So that's doing the job for them. Anyway, so I forgot. So just as it is that the body part conveys the soul, so every, and it is totally completely imbued with it, and it is totally completely permeated, and is totally completely expressing some soul aspect.
Right.
So it is that the mitzvahs convey godliness into this world as they are being performed. Okay. V'gam al nasha alakis. Okay. So what he's drawing when he does the positive mitzvahs, he's drawing the infiniteness into the world, and also into he says on, but really it's into his godly soul, because we have this idea of a shirkid ishan of a mitzvaysav, as he says right here, that he sanctified us with his commandments. What happens when a person does a commandment? He becomes kaddish. Does he become a holy dude? Not necessarily. Just because the guy put on tefillin for 10 seconds this morning doesn't make him holy.
Yeah, no,
but he's definitely a holier dude than if he hadn't put him on. Okay, so there is that effect.
Yes.
Okay, and it is going to affect a person. All the mitzvahs that a person does will physically affect them.
Yes, yes it will.
There is a story concerning the Baal Shem Tov that somebody was in the next town over, was very sick, and the doctors had given up on him. And somebody said, well, listen, I'm going to go call the Baal Shem Tov. Let him take a sip. Let him give a stab at it. Pardon the expression. So she comes running over crying, my mon is disturbed and my husband's going to die. And so he comes over, he comes and visits the guy. And he says, I need to be left alone with the guy. So this guy is like gray. He's like, you know, he's like,
yeah.
They call him Gomer at that point.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? He's
yeah,
just
exactly.
like, yeah. Says, I need to be left alone with him. So a period of time goes by. He says, I need some beef broth, please. This is beef broth. This guy about to die. What yeah. He said, listen, you want my help? You don't want my help.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay?
Yeah,
so he took the beef broth, and he took like a little spoonful of it, right. And he put it into the guy's mouth. Right. And as soon as he put it into the guy's mouth, his pallor changed from gray to pink.
Wow.
And by the time that he was finished feeding him the bowl, the guy was sitting up in bed already.
Hmm.
Okay? So afterwards, the doctor, and everybody's like really happy, this big miracle has just been perpetrated.
Yes.
The doctor came over to the Baal Shem Tov. He was leaving. He says, listen, I know what this guy had, and I know that beef broth wasn't the cure.
Exactly.
What gives? So he says, you're a physical doctor. I'm a spiritual doctor. I saw that this person had violated so many, had transgressed so many of the commandments that his arteries were blocked. His pipelines to the godliness were blocked. He wasn't getting any life force coming down to him because he wasn't didn't perform. So I talked to his neshama and said, listen, if you'll do tshuva, it'll clear the pipes and retie the knots, so then you'll be able to, and you'll dedicate yourself to a life of Torah and mitzvah, so you'll live. But if not, you're gone.
Your history, yeah.
So the neshama said, okay, I'll give it a go, you know, so I'll go, fine. So now at that point, so now that he did tshuva already,
right.
So that was really what the cure was, the beef broth was, because he hadn't eaten anything in such a long time.
Right.
He needed something to eat.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, something to eat.
So that's the, but, so yeah. Every single person, they may not feel it. I hear this all the time. I put on tefillin, I don't feel anything. And my response is, I put on tefillin, I don't feel anything either. You know, do I feel this like Maya? I tell people it's like Maya Shalat Alev, and there's a subjugation and tying oneself down to godliness, and specifically it says you have the Dalad Parshas of the Tefillin, the four parts of the head Tefillin go on the head, and that draws down from Moichin to godless, it draws down Hashem's intellect into your intellect so that you can think clearer and think and be smarter. And this is what I tell people, and this is what I believe happens. Do I feel smarter after I put on tefillin than from before I put on tefillin? No, I don't. Am I? No. Maybe I should do an IQ test before I put on tefillin and an IQ test after I put on tefillin, and see if anything happens over there.
Yeah.
But it's not a guarantee. I mean, you know, it's not going to be something that's necessarily measurable. Okay, because if that would be the case, then you can put on tefillin once and that would be fine. But we put on tefillin every single day.
Right.
Which means that every single day we're drawing down more of the same.
Yes.
Which meant that it wasn't enough what we did yesterday, we have to do it today too.
Right.
Okay, so there's this continuing thing going on over here.
Right.
And that's the way the mitzvahs are, is they are continuous. The person can't just say, well, I did them.
Yeah, been there, done that.
Yeah, we can't do that because it's an ongoing process, because the world is constantly growing and it's improving, and we have to improve the world, and if it's not going to be happening, then everything's going to get mucked up. Okay? So now that's the idea with the positive commandment, that a positive commandment is much greater in that it draws the godliness in an internalized fashion into pneumius. Okay? Or you want to say it sucks in the memale kol omim, if you want to use the jargon, the godliness that fills all the world. Aval inyan tshuva, but as far as tshuva is concerned, even though they've already forgiven him from any punishment, the fact that he rebelled against Hashem's dominion and he didn't do what Hashem wanted, but what happens is what he could have done, he doesn't get. His whole deal is
right.
That he has to draw godliness down in this specific means through one of these 248 commandments.
Right.
And what happened is he didn't do it.
Yeah.
So now he does tshuva. And what does a tshuva do? So tshuva cleans the pipes. Tshuva strengthens the connection.
Right.
But it doesn't fill in the gap.
Right.
as far as the mitzvahs aseh is concerned.
Right.
Okay, as he's going to say down the bottom of the page. You know, Hashem forgives somebody for idolatry, but wasting time, that's another story.
Yeah. I'm in deep trouble.
Okay, Kamaimar Rizal, Apostle Ma'av Shalom Yochel Asak, and as it's explained on the verse, some iniquity or some horrible thing that a person's not able to fix, Zu Shabitl Kriyas Mashal Shachriz Arvis. This is a person who forgot to say the Shema. Okay, why can't he fix it? Because how are you going to fix it?
Can't go back.
Va'av Shanisar Ma'atel Likris Kriyas Shmal Shal Arvis Vashachriz Lo'elim Ain Shuvasa Ma'el Is Lasachin Mashal Bitl Pamachas. He did Shuvah, and he's going to say on the next page. What's Shuvah? Tshuva is, I feel really bad for what I did till now. And I have resolve, I'm never going to do it again. And what happens at that point? Hashem says, fine, you're back to square zero. Okay, we'll tie everything up, we'll patch everything up, we'll fill in the cracks, but it doesn't accomplish that he says. He's not given credit for saying the Shema.
Right.
He missed it. He did the miss of doing tshuva, which is one of the 248 commandments. We said last week.
But
he did. But the Shema that he missed,
it's still gone.
He doesn't get credit for it. He did not do it. He did not make that connection.
Right.
He made other connections.
Yep.
Which the other connections are good. You know, it talks about you have. So using the example of the body, so you have the brain. Brain is a magnificent thing. Okay. 7 trillion functions every single second. And what happens is we see very often a person or Hamadolson has a stroke. So a certain part of the brain stops functioning.
Right.
Okay. But lo and behold, what happens is the brain works around it.
Right.
It's not to say that, okay, so this person had a stroke, he can't talk. And now suddenly through some kind of therapy, rehab, whatever it is, so that he now develops a way of talking.
Right.
It's not that. The part of the brain that was affected by the stroke is now back to where it was before the stroke.
No.
It's still affected by the stroke. But what has happened is the brain has learned to adapt to go around it so that what the brain was trying to accomplish, it can accomplish without that part of the brain.
Right.
That's what the tshuva is really doing.
Yeah.
The Shema he missed. He's not making the connection through that Shema.
Right.
What happens? He does teshuva. So the teshuva recircuits around that dead area, you might say, so that he is again doing what Hashem wants him to be doing.
Right.
And Hashem's going to say, okay, after 120 years, we're not going to mention anything about the Shema that you missed. But he didn't say the Shema. It's still not there. It's still like the brain part that's not being used.
Right.
We figure out a different way of doing it. So Hashem says, fine. If this person can talk after they have the stroke and has perfect clarity and no one knows that the guy ever had a stroke, it still doesn't mean that he didn't have a stroke. He had the stroke.
Had the stroke, right.
Okay, and he's still being affected by it. But he's learned to adapt. So the tshuva is this adaptation, which is going to somehow make up that he didn't say the Shema, but he still doesn't. He didn't say the Shema.
Right.
But then, however, al misses loy sase, when a person transgresses a commandment, one of the 365. And how is it possible that a person could even do such a thing? Alidei shenidbak hara b'nafshei, because of the evil which is attached to his soul. In other places, he says, quoting the Gemara, "Ein adam ayver aver al kam nichnas by ruach shtus," that a person becomes temporarily insane, and that would be the only reason why a person would do something wrong, because an understanding with every mitzvah that we do, we're making a connection to Hashem,
right?
And every transgression stops up the connection, severs the connection, however it is, and is akin to a spiritual death. So we say, what is this insanity? So a person doesn't think that if they do this, it'll cause any death.
Right.
It would be the same thing like a person reading a bottle of iodine with the big skull and crossbones on it and saying, well, I heard that iodine, you need iodine so that you don't get gorter, so I'm just going to drink this bottle of iodine down.
Take this down, right.
Okay? So that person you would call stupid.
Not for long.
Not correct. Okay. So this right. So what has happened is this person, how is it the person is even considering such a thing? Okay, there's something that has this
the elevator doesn't go to the top floor.
Yeah, there's this natia to it. There's like a thing stuck on his soul, you might say.
Yeah.
Okay, I heard it said, it says in chapter 8, that if a person, chapter 8 and 10, if a person has a desire for something not kosher.
Yeah.
What is it? It's a non-Jewish demon that's stuck onto his soul.
Seriously?
That's what it says in chapter 8. You forgot chapter 8. If you go back, we'll have to start all over
again. Wow. Okay, all right. Okay. I'm good for that.
So, or you could listen online.
Okay.
Okay, go back and listen online. So, but what does that mean is that there are things that are totally, completely, the expression in Yiddish is agara, totally, completely removed from our persona.
Mm.
There's no way that you would ever consider doing any of those transgressions.
Right, okay.
Okay?
That's right.
You can, it's like, and in the explanation of the mission that gets said a zillion times a day around the world, Rabbi Hanan ben Akasha or Ratzah Kashbar Al-Zachos is Yisrael. The people hear what Torah mitzvahs. Rabbi Hanan ben Akasha said that Hashem wanted to give favor to the Jewish people, therefore he gave him lots of mitzvahs. What does it mean he gave him lots of mitzvahs to give him merit?
Right.
Like, for example, there's a mitzvah, don't eat bugs.
Right.
Okay? And the Rambam, if you look at Hilchos Maicholos Asoras, there are certain types of water bugs that if a person eats one of these water bugs, he has transgressed 5 prohibitions.
Wow.
Okay? The question then becomes, who's going to eat one of these stupid bugs? Ew. You know?
You could probably count them.
Okay, maybe a Cajun or something like that. Yeah, okay, good. You know, they eat crawdaddies and other such crawly things. But we're not talking about, we're talking about Jews.
Yeah.
Okay, although I have jokingly said, and I really wouldn't mind knowing, is who was the first person who looked at a lobster and said, you know, I'd really like to eat
one. Boy, I'd like to have one of them. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, we'll just put it in a pot of boiling water alive and then crack it open and eat it with butter sauce.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that's like...
That's a great idea.
Who thought about that one?
Yeah.
Anyway, so the
I can talk.
So what's going to happen after 120 years? They're going to say, "Did you get any of these water bugs?" You're going to go, "No." Check.
Yeah.
Next, blood. Okay. Here we go. We're going to take. There's a nice big concealed piece of blood.
Yes.
And we're going to feed it to you.
Did you have some blood pudding?
Would you have some blood? No.
No, thanks.
Eckledick. My stomach is turning just even talking about it.
Right.
After 120 years, did you eat blood? No.
No.
Check.
Right.
Okay? So we have all of these mitzvahs that you have no natia to whatsoever. All these prohibitions.
Right.
You are repulsed by them.
Right.
Okay? And if it would be that you would be repulsed by all of them, well, we'd call you a tzaddik and you'd be teaching a class. Okay? Because a tzaddik, by the way, is repulsed at the fact of wasting time.
Right.
Yes. You know, so this, that a person has the natiya to doing that thing wrong, that this person can talk in the middle of davening, is because there's something stuck on his soul.
Right.
Some impurity,
ouch,
which is cleaving to him.
Right.
In addition to that, what else do you need? We've talked about this before. What else do you need in order to do something wrong? Is you need to have Hashgacha Pratis.
Yeah.
Right now. Because we talk about everything's in the hands of heaven except for your fear of heaven, meaning you have a choice if you're going to do an Aveira or not do an Aveira.
Right.
Let me ask you a question. Can you eat a ham sandwich right this second?
No.
Why?
There's none around.
There's no ham sandwich right here.
Right.
Why is there no ham sandwich here?
Well, it's a Jewish home. There's not going to be one.
It's divine providence.
Right, of course.
Divine providence
has it. I agree.
Because the fact if there's a ham sandwich in my house or not is totally and completely up to God. My cleaning lady could have come. She could have left the ham sandwich right there on the counter. I would have left it there waiting for her to come pick it back up. And, you know, but that didn't happen.
Right.
Okay, there are no ham sandwiches in my house because God didn't make it that there should be a ham sandwich in my house. So therefore, you don't have the freedom of choice if you're going to eat a ham sandwich right now.
Indeed.
Okay, so God decides which sins you're going to do. In addition to this one which said God decides which sins you're going to do, he doesn't decide you're going to do, he puts you in a situation where you would be put into a situation where you'd be repulsed. Because what's the point?
Yeah.
Okay, God's going to put a big plate of blood in front of you. What's that going to do? Yeah, no, I've been to slaughterhouses.
Yeah.
I have never once ever thought about it. Is that blood is gushing out of that cow's neck? I think I'd really like to have...
Give me a cup.
Give me a cup. Exactly, which yeah. I have seen yes. Goyim do that.
Yes, yes.
Okay?
Yes.
But that was never one of... You know, I really loved... Just about to hurl.
Yeah.
You know, so I saw that one.
Just didn't take long to...
Yeah,
you
know, so...
That, did you?
So... It's all up to the person puts themselves in the situation to allow themselves to do the wrong thing.
Yes.
If a person, like a person has a compulsion, for example.
Mm.
Okay, let's say a person is a compulsive eater.
Mm.
Okay, round cake, this person can't control themselves.
Right.
So what do? You don't have any cake.
Right.
If there's no cake around for the guy to eat, then he's not going to eat cake. He's not going to, right. He's not going to succumb to his compulsions.
Correct.
Okay, a person is a TV addict.
Mm.
You don't have a TV in the house.
Right.
He's not going to watch television.
Right.
As simple as that.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, if a person is a junkie, it's a little bit harder, you know. So, or a person's, you know, some kind of a chemical dependency on something.
Right. That's a different.
Okay.
Right.
So it's a different story, but you know, you have ways of dealing with rehab with that too.
Right. Right. Right.
Hmm. Okay. So the. But Hashem, if a person wants to do an Avera, Hashem is going to say, oh, you want to do it? Okay, we'll open up some doors.
Yeah.
Unless, of course, Hashem really says, no, like Chanech, for example,
right, right,
in
right.
the Bible.
And he took him.
He wanted to do something wrong, and Hashem said, nah, I don't think so.
That's not yours.
You're out of here.
Yeah,
we're going to cut your life
we're
short.
Take
okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it is true that Hashem, you can't do anything unless Hashem wants to. There is a bridge that goes through the center of Vancouver.
Okay.
More people have jumped off this bridge than the Golden Gate Bridge.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's people go from all over Canada. They come to jump off this bridge.
It's a suicide
themselves.
Bridge, huh?
It's a suicide bridge. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Okay. So one guy. He writes out a note, he leaves it by the bridge, that he's never been able to do anything right in his lifetime, and he's ending it.
Right.
And he jumped off the bridge, and he landed in a scow full of manure. He didn't die.
And they wrote on it, you're right.
Guy couldn't even kill himself.
Exactly.
You know, so. It wasn't his time.
Exactly.
God says, you want to kill yourself now? Forget about it.
That's not time.
Not only am I not going to let you kill yourself, I'm going to embarrass the hell out of you.
Exactly.
I don't want to know what happened with the splat. When that thing was splat.
Yeah,
we're not,
I don't
we're
know
not, we're not going
yeah,
there.
No.
Okay.
That's what you call being in deep weather.
Yeah, definitely. What happens when a person transgresses the commandment is that he causes a blemish. Blemish, the word pagam over here, means that it's like a fault. It's a short circuit. The wiring is not working. The pipe is not open.
Right.
There's a break. There's a gap there someplace.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the word pagam means.
Uh-huh.
There's a big blockage in his source from whence he was hewn.
Mm.
Okay. So now what it says, when we're talking about the performance of a negative commandment. Let me just finish the parenthesis and I'll say this.
Yeah.
And this, it affects the garments of the 10 spheres of Asiya, of the world of action. That Hashem affixed 10 tikkunim, which is 10 tikkunim, means like 10 pieces of jewelry, which are 10 garments. That through which the souls of men fly. Okay, so what happens when a person doesn't do a transgression? So we talked about it before. There's a famous it's not applicable here. When a person doesn't do a transgression, so the godliness that he is tapping into at that point is a higher level of godliness.
Mm.
That's why the tshuva is so much stronger, because what happens is a person, let's say, given that we're talking about it as a person, this argument, are we right now not murdering, or is it only if you wanted to murder somebody, then
right,
you are murdering?
Right.
So the effect of a low sase, of not performing a transgression, let's say the person has an opportunity to do something wrong, and he controls himself and he doesn't do that thing wrong.
Right.
So according to all opinions, what happens now is he's drawing down, because it says shavaloyasa ke ilu asa ke ilu tasa. It's a person who sat and did nothing. We give him credit as though he did a positive commandment. Because he actively didn't do something. Okay,
right,
so now what he's talking about, actively not doing something, is he drawing godliness into something? He's not using anything to draw down the godliness. There's no keli, there's no vessel to hold the godliness that he's drawing down.
Okay.
You can't say, well, I'm not eating a piece of pork that weighs 5 ounces.
Right.
So therefore, I'm going to draw down a not piece of pork 5 ounces. No, that's not the way it works. The way we're talking about with utilization is how much did you use it? This guy didn't use that 5 ounces of pork at all. So okay. He's infinitely not using the 5 ounces of pork. So what he's drawing down, as it says, is he's drawing down the infiniteness of Hashem, which does not enclose itself into anything. It remains, or makif, it remains above revelation.
Okay.
That's why you have the expression on the verse, Ze zichri la'olam v'zeh shmi l'dor dor. Okay, this is my remembrance forever. This is my name for all generations. Okay, zichri, with the name, my remembrance means positive commandments. Remember to do something.
Okay.
If shamar v'zachar b'dibur echad, right? So zachar is the things you have to do on Shabbos, okay. And shamar are the things you're not allowed to do on Shabbos.
Okay.
So zichriim vavke is 248. If you have the word zichri, my remembrance is meaning my positive commandments, the numerical value of that word, with the letters, the numerical values of Vavke, the last two letters of Hashem's name, which are the letters that relate to the creation directly. They're the life force which instills itself into the creation. That equals 248 positive commandments. Okay? Shmi with Yudke equals 365. Okay, not Shmi, Shamar. Shamar, This is the negative commandments are an expression of Yud-Ke, which is godliness, which is beyond being related directly to the creation. It relates superficially to the creation. So by sitting back and not doing something wrong, we're bringing into the world a superficial level of godliness which relates to the world, but it doesn't enclose itself in the world. It's not a godliness which is revealed.
It's indirect.
I wouldn't use the word.
It's a bad term?
No, indirect is not the right word. It's superficially effective, because where is it? It's right here, too.
Okay.
This is what we refer to as a super... What it means, when we say superficial, it doesn't mean that it's... When we say the expression is encompassing light. So he said back in chapter 50, in the 50s, where he discusses the definition of the word makif, means that it's not surrounding you,
right?
It's that it doesn't reveal itself within you.
It imbues everything, but it doesn't. It's not on a revealed plane,
right?
Okay,
but where is it that you see that a person is really holy
when he does
when he's not doing something? Person who does 248 commandments is doing what he's supposed to do. That's not defined as a holy person. A person who puts on tefillin and says shema and has mezuzahs and sitzes and blows the shofar and do all those things. This is not a holy person. This is a person who's doing what he's supposed to be doing.
Right.
The word holy kaddish,
it just means functioning.
Yeah. This is what you're supposed to do.
Right.
Okay? So.
Interesting.
Where is it that we see holiness is when he says kaddish is removed? The word holy means removed from the profane and the mundane. When we see that this person is not doing something, that's where they achieve the holiness.
The thing is we can't see that.
That's correct. That's why you can really never know how holy a person
exactly.
is.
That's only
my grandmother used to say, I probably said it already 30 times in this class. You can go back and listen to all the tapes. My grandmother used to say, it's no big deal to be frum and shul.
Yeah. Right.
Because the guy's standing there with his sitter and his talis and he's shuckling. Everybody looks from. Mm. Okay, what is he doing in his business? How is he? What is he not doing in his business?
Right.
Okay, the guy who's running his store properly, you're not going to say, "Oh, let me see what he's not doing."
Uh-huh.
Okay, it's only when you know you get like, you know, the butcher who's who's bringing in trafe meat and selling it as kosher. Those are the guys that make headlines.
Yeah.
The guy around the corner who's bringing in kosher meat and selling it as kosher doesn't get in the newspaper.
He's no kudos, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's doing what he's supposed to do.
Right.
Okay. So the fact that this person now is separated themselves from doing something wrong, that person is attaching themselves to a higher level of godliness.
Hmm.
And as with everything else, once a person overcomes the initial inertia, so it's easier to stay on the roll. It's easy to keep on doing it.
Mm.
So once a person has taught themselves that it's better to refrain from doing this wrong thing, they can then appreciate the benefits thereof.
Yeah.
There is no mitzvah to keep kosher.
Right.
It's all a bunch of negative
negatives.
Yeah, there's
a mitzvah not to eat treif.
Correct.
Right.
You're not allowed to eat milk and meat together. You're not allowed to eat pork. You're not allowed to eat an animal that's not slaughtered properly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you're not allowed to eat blood. You're not allowed to eat all the various crustaceans and other things that people eat. All of this, it's one of those statements that kind of blows people away. They get kind of like totally confused. There is no mitzvah to keep kosher.
Right.
There are, but what happens is I have there's a family that I've been working with for a number of years. And so this last week, they finally completed the process of making their house kosher.
Oh, wow.
It's a two-year process that started with, okay, we're not bringing pork in the house.
Okay.
Okay, that's how it started 2 years
all
ago.
All right, fine, good.
So slowly, they finally did the plunge quite literally when they took all their dishes and stuff and plopped them in the mikveh.
Mm-hmm.
That must be where the expression comes from, taking the plunge. And their house is now 100%.
Cool.
So I asked the lady, I don't know if I asked her, I came up in conversation, and she said, you know, I feel a certain sense of spirituality coming from my kitchen, which is wonderful. I don't feel spirituality coming from my kitchen, but because it was always kosher.
I was going to say, because you didn't work at it the way she did.
Right, exactly. I didn't have to do anything.
Right.
Yeah. I just kind of was just I got married, you know, we had to shower and I had to take the stuff to the mikveh, but then it was set up
Right. It was never a challenge.
Correct. It was never nothing. Maybe the spirituality is abounding in my kitchen the same as it is in hers.
Of course it is.
I can't appreciate it because I don't know what to compare it to.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So this person now feels the spirituality because they're not doing something.
Correct.
And that's very much true.
That's huge.
They are not doing something, and therefore, they are tapping into they're being surrounded by, they're showered upon this higher level of elokus.
Yep. Absolutely.
Therefore, ein kapar lenafsha lo lemaila ad yom kippur. Therefore, when a person transgresses a commandment, what he has basically done is he's got himself totally and completely surrounded by the klippa. He's attached to the klippa. He's in with the klippa. He's getting his life force from the klippa, as it says in chapter 6 in Tanya way back when. He just wants to remove himself from it. So it's not so easy just to unplug. What has to happen? He has to wait till Yom Kippur. Kemosha Kosev. V'chaper al hakedish mitumasim b'nei Yisrael u'pasheihem. As it says, to atone for the holiness from the impurities of the children of Israel and their transgressions. Lifnei Hashem titaro, lifnei Hashem daika. Before Hashem, they shall be purified. Before Hashem specifically. Okay, so that when the Friedrich Rebbe talks about at great length on the Shabbos Shuvah Maimer, on the pasuk Shuvah Hashem Ad Hashem Elokecha, Shuvah Yisrael Ad Hashem Elokecha, And which means that you should return, O Israel, until Hashem, your God. Okay? So there he says that the idea of tshuva is that you return even higher, to a level higher than Hashem. Until Hashem is Elokecha, you know, that God becomes your level of nature, the Yud Kei Vav Kei. But in order for that to happen, you got to go to a higher level than that. And he's going to talk about that when he gets into to tshuva according to Chassidus.
Okay.
Okay? Stay tuned. That's like chapter 6. Yes.
That's pretty high.
Yes.
That's
but that's where tshuva goes. That's why it says nothing gets in the way of a Jew's tshuva.
Yeah.
Okay? If a Jew wants to do tshuva, there's nothing going to stand in the way. Okay? Hashem says, fine.
Done.
Okay? Lachin ein lilmud mikan shum kulach asa shalom b'mitzvah asa v'prapet on the Torah. Therefore, because of this, you can't say, oh, because it's so easy to do tshuva for transgressing, for not doing a positive commandment. Therefore, positive commandments must be lighter than negative commandments. It says no. It's each one has their own thing.
Right.
There is no way that we can weigh any mitzvah whatsoever.
No, it's impossible.
Yeah, he talks about this in chapter 2.
Right.
Okay. Over prophet Talmud Torah. Okay. We're talking about a person who doesn't learn Torah. A person who doesn't learn Torah is really pretty bad.
Exactly.
Okay. Why? It says Hashem could forgive somebody who transgresses idolatry, adultery, and murder, even though these are heinous crimes which are punishable by death. But Hashem has trouble forgiving somebody who wastes time. Okay, so how is it a person can be atoned for idolatry? Idolatry is actually easy to understand. A person puts his head down in front of a stone and says, this is my God. And then says afterwards, OMG, what did I do?
Yeah.
Okay, that was really wrong of me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's easy. That's an easy one. But what about murder?
Yeah, that one you can't take back.
You can't go, oops, I'm sorry.
Yeah, they fixed that, yeah.
But it doesn't bring the person back, that's true.
No.
But even such a thing, a person could make amends. Mm-hmm. Okay? And it's going to be that his amends is going to be that he's going to have to get killed, but he's going to have to get executed. Okay, no. So once he's executed, he starts at square zero again.
Right.
But a person who wastes time, what's he going to do? I'll do more tomorrow. Well, you could have done more tomorrow and still have done what you did today.
Right, you can.
It's really hard to make it up.
Mm-mm.
The Rebbe went to... The Rebbe never, once he was a Rebbe, the Rebbe never left New York State.
Right.
Okay, there are certain instances that he, first he went to Queens very often to go to his father-in-law's grave.
Mm.
And there were occasions where he very secretly went to Manhattan. He'd go visit a niece, and there were various other Rebbes or relatives or whatever that the Rebbe went to. They went to the Menachem Aval people, you know, in the early 50s and 60s, and maybe even as late as the 70s. And the Rebbe went 3 times to the Catskills to camp.
Really?
And the Rebbe didn't take the George Washington Bridge and take 17 up, which is the quick way. The Rebbe went through Westchester and took the Tappan Zee Bridge and went across, which is a much longer way. And I'm not sure, I think it was after the 3rd time that he went. I'm not sure when he said it. Because he went once when the camp first opened up, before it was in Parksville. He went again another year, and then he went to Parksville, and they invited him again to come back. And the Rebbe responded after they invited him to come back again. He said, I am still trying to make up for the lost time from the last time that I went. Okay, and I can imagine when the Rebbe was being driven in the car, he wasn't looking out the window.
No, I'm guessing he wasn't window shopping.
You know, looking at the beautiful, the Catskills. Yeah, oh, the beautiful Catskills.
I got it.
When he came to Parksville, so they had prepared a room for the Rebbe to stay overnight. And they hoped that he would forbrang up there, similar to like the stories of other Rebbes.
Yeah.
Okay. And so the head of the camp, whoever it was, approached the Rebbe to ask him. And before he asked the Rebbe, so it says the Rebbe took a deep breath. He said, "Oy, gepravin dashke." He said, I just did my country. I'm ready to go. You know, okay, he's not staying.
Right.
Yeah, okay. I just went to the country. That's it. It's all I need. I'm gone.
I'm done.
Goodbye. Right. I'm not staying overnight.
Yeah.
Okay. So, then, that's the end. That's the second thing. Okay, so we have the first one. There's three levels of tshuva, number one and number two we've just discussed. And those are the person who doesn't do a positive commandment.
Right.
That he just has to sit and ask for forgiveness. Hashem forgives him. Person who does a negative commandment has to do tshuva, feel sorry about it, resolve never do it again. And Hashem says, okay, we'll see. We'll put it on the shelf till Yom Kippur.
Right.
And Yom Kippur is going to come and cleanse you, because that's the idea of the word kapara, as he's going to say right now, is the word kapara means to clean. But then, over akrisis and mises based in, a person transgresses a heinous crime, one which is punishable by death at the by the age of 50,
right,
or by mises based in, or he gets executed in a court of law. Tshuva and Yom Kippur toilin. So the guy feels really bad that he did it, and he resolves, I'm never going to do that one again. So his tshuva gets put on the shelf. The Yom Kippur gets put on the shelf. Until what happens, Yisurin Mamarkin, and afflictions cleanse him. Usually when we're talking about affliction over here, if you're talking about such a serious thing, what affliction we're talking about is the actual execution, the actual death. This person is going to have this sin that he's going to have to deal with until he dies. Pirish Gaimrim HaKapara, the affliction causes the atonement. It's like the word kapara, it comes from the expression like to wipe, cleanse, and to shine up the soul. Because the word kapara comes from the same word meaning like to wipe away, to wipe away the schmutz of the sin. Shenemar pekadati b'shevet p'shem u'nigayim avaynam. Ad kano shenis abraisa. As it says, and I will punish him with a stick for their sins, and with afflictions their, or like plagues, afflictions their sins. And this is where the braisa ends. So the Rebbe asks a question. This braisa that he quotes, quotes a verse for all three. It says, there's a verse that says that a person just has to sit and Hashem's going to forgive him. As it says in the verse, Shavivim Hashem Shavivim. You'll sit and Hashem will return. There's a pun between Shav and Shuv. Means Shav means to sit and Shuv means to return. My children will sit and they'll return to me. Okay? And there's a verse by the by the Yom Kippur thing also. As a verse, a pasuk from Chumash that Hashem says, and Yom Kippur will come and will atone for their sins.
Right.
So the Alter Rebbe doesn't quote those two verses here. He's quoting the Braisa, but he leaves that out. But this verse, he leaves here. As it says, Pekadati b'shevet p'shem v'negayim v'avayinam. Why? It's because the first two types of tshuva are totally and completely isurus of the latata. They're totally and completely up to your performance.
Right.
The person says, I feel bad. So Hashem says, okay, don't have to worry about it. Clean. Second thing, a person did something wrong. I feel bad. Hashem says, okay, you know what? You got Yom Kippur. You'll do a Yom Kippur. You'll do the Yom Kippur. And I'll do the kapar. I'll take care of you.
Right.
Okay? This one, the third one it says is that it has to come through affliction. But it says pekaidati, is going to quote soon. The pekaidati, I will hit him with a rod.
Yeah.
The I there is the super capital. Hashem is going to do it.
Right.
So there, the atonement, you can't do it. You can't get there from here.
Right.
Somebody who transgresses such a heinous crime, he can't do it himself. He can't get back in.
Right.
And people should know beforehand that this is they're called heinous crimes because they're called heinous because they are heinous.
Right.
And included in that list happens to be violating the Shabbos, eating on Yom Kippur, eating chametz on Pesach, along with 20-something or so varieties of incest and homosexuality and bestiality and murder and idolatry.
Right, right, right.
Okay, so those are really horrible things.
Sure.
Eating chametz on Pesach? Yeah, it's also considered a heinous crime. because the keeping Pesach is basically the foundation of our religion, which we'll have to talk about it another time. As it says, Ad Kan L'Shaneh, this is as far as we're going.
Okay.
To be continued.
There you go.